Good evening. This is Life Rattle, a story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1239, we present two new stories by Andrew Iamaki. On tonight's program, we feature the writing of Andrew Iamaki. Andrew Iamaki was born in Peterborough in 1989, the youngest of three children. At age 12, he moved from a city of more than 72,000 to the small farming village of Cambrai, just north of Lindsay. It was a culture shock for him, trading sidewalks and parks for expanding fields of hay and soy. Andrew Iamaki grew up an avid sports fan, playing all types of sports, with a penchant for hockey, and also developed a love for the visual arts. He finds inspiration in the contrast between the rules and organized structure of competitive sport and the inventiveness and open-ended creativity of visual art. Andrew Iamaki's storytelling is subtle. His sharp observations, almost understated, build a framework with enough psychic space to draw the listener right into the experience. What Andrew leaves unspoken is often just as, or even more powerful than what is said. Tonight's first story is that of an adolescent at a school dance who wears his awkwardness and intense emotions on his sleeve. Let's listen now as Andrew Iamaki reads Yellow, tonight on Life Rattle.
Yellow by Andrew Iamaki. The soles of my sneakers chirp against the tiled gym floor as I maneuver around Jessica's toes. Speakers blast the song Yellow by Coldplay from a mix CD, and streamers overhead stir with the weight of everyone's hot breath. The basketball nets catch the lights from the strobe, and boys and girls stand separated at each end of the court, cradling the arcs of the three-point lines. Only Jessica and I and three other couples dance together. The gym reeks of odor from the armpits of 30 12-year-old kids. Matt, Dan, and Drew push and shove each other as they fight over who gets to dance with Jordan. Matt has Dan in a headlock, and Drew throws in a punch wherever he sees an opening. They have been fighting over the girl all night. I rotate Jessica in tight, timid circles. I study everyone and everything around us. I examine every brick on the wall, searching for a place to rest my eyes, anywhere but on Jessica. I settle on the wall over Jessica's right ear and follow the horizontal lines of the mortar until they reach the doorframe of the fire escape. I look down and smile awkwardly at Jessica, then nervously look back at the door. Mrs. McCallum saunters past the bowl of lukewarm punch. She opens the fire escape door to alleviate some of the discomfort. The open door lets in the view of the sun setting over the hayfields outside, and a soft breeze that tickles the tips of Mrs. McCallum's short blonde hair. Her shawl catches flight, then drifts back down to her shoulders. She grabs one of the vacant folding chairs that line the gym walls and props open the door. The outside air brings little relief. A film of sweat seeps from my pores, and beads of sweat slowly drip down my eyebrows and chin. My hands clam up as they hover over Jessica's waist, and my stomach boils with nerves. My tongue goes numb. Words dribble out of my mouth like drool. "You look so beautiful, Jessica," I say. We lock eyes. She just smiles. "No, Jessica, you're so pretty, like definitely the prettiest ever." She smiles again. I notice the clock on the wall from my skewed angle and see that its round standard face reads 9:15. The foul air in the gym still hangs heavy, but Jessica smells sweet. Her hair smells like vanilla. Her neck smells like cinnamon. I move closer to her. I work up the nerve and look at Jessica again. A single lock of her sandy blonde hair escapes her updo. It falls and frames the left side of her face. Her skin glistens as we lock eyes again. She smiles at me. I love the way her smile makes her nose scrunch and squishes her freckles. Nervous sweat envelops me and cools the hot air from the gym. My skin blisters with goosebumps. I want to kiss her so bad. I've had a crush on her since the first day of school. Now I tremble in a lake of cold sweat, unable to make the move and kiss Jessica. The song continues to pump through the gym as we dance. The lyrics of Yellow mark each gut-wrenching second and say every word I wish I could. You know I love you so. You know I love you so. I lean in. I pull back. Any normal person would kiss her. Is everything okay? She asks. I swallow the bag of marble in my throat and stare into her eyes. My heart runs laps as I work up the nerve to tell Jessica how I feel about her. I have so much to say. I want to tell her about the freckles on her nose, how she sometimes snorts when she laughs, and how I want to hold her hand every single day at recess. I want to tell Jessica all the things I love about her. I wish I could just rip the lyrics from the speakers and hand her a profession of my love. Instead, as my feet barely miss crushing her toes, I whisper, I mean it, Jessica. You are, like, so pretty. Really, like, so pretty. She smiles.
That was Andrew Iamaki reading his story, Yellow. Tonight's second story brings us to work at a Canadian Tire store in Northern Ontario. Our narrator's tale is one that many young people will identify with. Let's listen now as Andrew Iamaki reads Shit Tire, Fenelon Falls, tonight on Life Rattle.
Shit Tire, Fenelon Falls by Andrew Iamaki. 10 minutes to close and Irwin's still riding my ass. Someone apparently didn't crush their own cardboard, and somehow it's my fault. I hate working here. Good night, Andrew, Angie says as I see her leaving the store after her shift. Is everything okay? My shoes chirp as I stop and look at her. Just fucking Irwin. What else is new? She nods. She knows. She's been there. The once white floor tiles now shine gray and yellow like the row of an old smoker's teeth. Gallons of grease cake every groove of the once pristine floor, and dust rounds off every corner. I kick my feet through the piles of dirt on the floor as I make my way to the back of the store and to the cardboard crusher. I punch open the swinging doors and stare at an avalanche of cardboard boxes. Every box has Tide written on the side. They are clearly Shannon's from the housewares department. I don't open very many Tide boxes in the garden center. Irwin is too stupid to make that connection. I let out a massive sigh and begin clearing a 5-foot path to the crusher. The radio hisses from my right hip pocket. Can I get a carryout? Patio slabs? The radio cuts out. I ignore the call. Tim can get it. Besides, Irwin already told me that crunching the cardboard is my number one priority. I force the cardboard into the machine's gaping mouth. I press the lever and watch it chew its meal. Is somebody coming for that carryout? The cashier waits another minute and repeats the call. Is someone come? Irwin interrupts over the radio. Andrew, what are you doing? It's your job to do carryouts. Answer her. All the employees can hear Irwin, and any customer who happens to be standing within 10 feet of them does too. What an asshole. I'm doing cardboard like you said, I say flatly over the radio. Tim should be out there. Irwin squawks back. Your job is carryouts. I don't care where Tim is. I'm telling you to do it. I swallow every curse word I know and walk away from the crusher. I walk back through the store and hope to see Irwin's little rat face on his giraffe neck of a body. I badly want to punch his bulgy bug eyes into the back of his head, but I don't see him. I step outside into the heat. My lungs almost collapse, and sweat instantly drips down my neck and back. The customer's truck sulks under the weight of the 5 patio slabs and Tim on the flatbed. Janet shouldn't be lifting anything, but she tries because no one else offered to help. How many more? I ask, approaching the truck. This makes 6, so 64, Tim says, laying down a 50-pound patio slab. I look at my phone. It's 5:55. The store closes at 6 p.m. I've been here since 7:30 a.m. I tell Janet she can leave, but she refuses. She knows that no one can leave until we're done. I work twice as hard so she doesn't have to help as much. Tim keeps up with me. The edges of the slabs grind through the skin at the joints of my fingers. My hands cramp and my arms almost give out at the 40th slab. Janet can't lift anymore, but still tries to help. Irwin's voice screams over our radios. Andrew, why isn't the cardboard finished? I lay down another slab and answer him. I'm helping Tim and Janet, like you told me to do. I wait and don't hear an answer. It's 6:20 now. We quicken our pace. My hands are numb. My head pounds with exhaustion. And the feeling of battery acid pumping through my veins makes me nauseous. Irwin comes and yells at us. Janet, what are you doing? He says. I'm helping these guys because nobody else would. Irwin doesn't flinch. He doesn't even look at us. They can do it themselves. Irwin turns to us as Janet leaves. Hurry the hell up. Some of us want to go home tonight. He turns back and follows Janet inside. The last slab slams onto the flatbed. Tim jumps from the truck and onto the asphalt. He grabs his lunch bag and leaves. The driver tips his hat and pulls out. I bend over with my hands on my knees and labor for air. I hurry inside and race up the stairs to the break room to gather my things. I hope Irwin doesn't see me. I'm exhausted, but I know I have to be back in the morning at 7:30. I bolt down the stairs, landing on only 2 of the 26 steps. I stop at the punch-in computer. My fingers look like a blur as they key in my password. I hit enter. The screen reads 6:55. I trip out the door to my car. I dig the keys out of my pocket as I approach the driver's side. I rip the door open. I plop myself down into the seat and stick the keys into the ignition. Irwin pages me again. Andrew, the cardboard still isn't done. Where are you? His voice echoes in the small interior of the car. I reach down and grab my radio. My fingers run along the seam of the plastic and the antenna. They continue down and reach the volume dial. Andrew, answer when I call you. Where are you? My index finger and thumb caress the dial. Andrew, and click. I turn the radio off and pull out of the parking lot.
That was Andrew Iamaki reading Shit Tire Fenelon Falls. This concludes Life Rattle number 1239. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Andrew reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Actman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear more new stories.